a Spoken Web radio show. We're here in the booth live. I'm Catherine McLeod, and I'm here with Jason Camelot, and we are in Vienna. Well, sonically, we are in Vienna. We are going to be listening to some clips that we recorded in Vienna at the Poetry Off the Page and Around the Globe conference held in June of 2025. Jason, this is actually the second part of our return to Vienna. The first we played over the holidays, and you can always listen to that again on our archives on the CGLO website. This time we're returning live to Vienna from the booth at the CGLO studio. How does it feel and sound to be back?
Sorry, I have trouble concentrating and speaking while I'm waltzing, Catherine. So that's why I haven't spoken yet. But
I was attempting to speak along, have my voice lilt along with the waltz here. I think we ended up on either side of the room, but we're going to waltz back towards the microphones and towards the sound booth get back on the page and in the recordings. We are really, really looking forward to this show, I have to say. It's just terrific to be back in Vienna.
Yeah, and it's great to be back in Vienna. It's sort of back in Vienna, this time with friends, with people we knew before we went to Vienna. Mm-hmm. So that's a kind of nice part of it as well. Mm-hmm. The show's really going to be focusing on one artist with, you know, an additional artist who's connected to that first artist.
Yes.
Who was with us in Vienna and also who performed in some pieces in Vienna.
Mm-hmm. They also are both artists who are tied to Spoken Web. One very much tied to Spoken Web and has been part of Spoken Web since the beginning. And you'll recognize this artist's name when we talk about her work. But the other artist also appeared at the Spoken Web Symposium when it was out in Alberta, and really kind of became quite connected to various Spoken Web collaborators. So it was really terrific to meet them across the ocean in Vienna. We're being kind of mysterious about them, but we look forward to introducing you to both of their works. And I think, in fact, one of them is going to welcome us to Vienna. So we're going to fade that clip in to start and bring us back to Vienna.
Warm welcome to Vienna, and let's applaud! Woo!
Yes, we're here in Vienna. What's the street? What's the Straße we're on?
We are on Buchfeldstraße.
Buchfeldstraße, in the 8th district of Vienna. And
we're here with Clara Duplessis.
Clara, I'm going to say a few words of introduction, was both a reader at the featured and open mic reading. She was selected from a hat to read last night. And then
similarly, impromptu.
On very short notice, delivered a full-length paper on the opening or second panel of the day, today. Clara, can you say a bit about yourself?
My name is Clara Duplessis. I'm a postdoctoral fellow at UBC Okanagan in Canada. And I'm super happy to be in Vienna as part of the Spoken Web team. I'm also a poet.
What brought you to this particular conference?
It's called Poetry Off the Page. Enough said.
Very good. We're going to be playing a few of your pieces. The piece that you read at the reading last night had a great reception. Mm-hmm. And I've heard you perform it a few times, but you seem to perform it a little more like a slam poet last night. No, I'm just kidding. But you seem to be you put a little more oomph into it last night than I've heard in other performances. Can you walk us through your experience of the reading last night?
I feel like I want to go back by a couple of years almost. I started in a couple of years ago. I did a collaborative book with Hashayar Kes Mohammadi. And they proposed writing speech poems, which were poems that we spoke before we wrote them down. And that radically changed something in my poetics, I think, because it created like a link between the composition and the performance in ways that before had been much more cerebral. And so going forward, I've consistently been more interested in in the performance aspect and like the vocalization of it. And I think this particular poem, the reading is a moment of hope, which was written actually at the same time as the speech poems, even though it's in a later book, kind of maintains that energy. And so the performance of it has become increasingly embodied throughout different iterations of it, as you were maybe picking up on, right? Mm-hmm. And the more embodied it is, the easier it is to make it more slammy, perhaps, because that rhythm is coming out in a natural way.
How did the context in which you read your poem, because there were a lot of other different kinds of poetries read that night before you, maybe frame in your mind what you were going to do on stage?
It absolutely framed. I mean, like, I think Katarina Wente went before me, who we've been talking about it over the past couple of days, is one of the big slam poets in Vienna or in Austria. And there was definitely a moment where I was sitting in the audience where it's like, oh no, I have to go after, I have to go after this, right? And so not wanting to seem like I was like fully disparate from the kind of more vocal performance poetry that was preceding me, so I definitely chose something that I felt would fit into the context more fully, including of course the title, which the reading is a moment of hope feels representative of the conference as a whole.
Yeah. Before I turn things over to Catherine to ask some more questions, can you talk a little bit about the effects of jet lag on your reading?
Yes, I have been sleeping variations of 0 hours and 11 hours in like different nights of this week. I've been feeling both exhilarated and jittery. But for the most part, it's like the jet lag has just added to a general sense of excitement.
Well, thanks for those terrific replies, Clara. And, it was a pleasure to hear you read the poem last night, because I also got to hear you read it at the Inspired Word Cafe in Kelowna during the Spoken Web Symposium. And to hear a poem performed twice quite recently, and just to sort of think of how you read it. But I also felt like hearing you read it a few times, I feel like I can like start to talk about the poem, or like it's yeah. And I actually want to ask you about what it feels like to say the line that you say, in which you draw the connection between book and boo, because you say it really.
That was a fan favorite.
Yeah,
always a fan favorite. That's the only laugh I ever get in all my work over the past 20 years.
And it's so fascinating, because you deliver it with a straight face, and then it's like you kind of like wait for the audience to either laugh or not laugh.
They always laugh.
So is there going to be a way for us to play a recording of this poem, or do we have to wait to hear it live next?
I do have a recording from Obero that I've done in Montreal.
Okay. Yeah. Terrific. Well, I hope that we'll be listening to that next on this radio show, Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show. We are talking with poets in Vienna.
It's called The Reading is a Moment of Hope. Death dons a family meeting, confinement of life in reverse version, cataplectic. Every skulking member sucked back into the womb where the worm is the tomb. Read last rite, Stravinsky of energy, sharp nervous bursts beckon to a frantic, unfinished, panic-stricken clasp at life before death. Role of this get-together is the funereal, the fun in the unreal. There is so much sadness in each unit of humanity. Un becomes it, as in sadness becomes humanity, or sadness suits mortality. Morality is not the terrain of the hereafter. Orality tantrum greases the pan before public decease. One body is teeth, and one body is bitten. This is the model of error, or the O of apostrophe, the straw seen from above in the instant before squeezing between dental
inhalation. Airborne agenda in elegy. Horizontal Holy Ghost beast march overpowers cruising for crusades. Even democracy parades across the globe as if on demand. Secular religion still religion. Humanitarian still humanity. Return mankind to the animal table vibe. Books on top, books inside, ass open like a paperback. The closest approximation to a book is boo. Scary. All this galloping to the races of a good life when loved ones pass and all that's left is beauty. Complexity eclipsed by lipping sonics. Oblivion to obvious optics. Sweat water to sweet water. It sucks. The uncontrollable grief of everything that was meant to be. Death, hate, pig-eyed love, blood on the amour abattoir, diminuendo of ego, war, illness, defeat, the indecipherable fight, infidelity as the dopamine of disappointment. Nuclear is both single family and figuration of hitting the roof big time. Edit this satire to satyr. That guy has a tail and ears. It's normal to have ears. That guy has horns. Isn't it normal to be born? Bomb the bad boy genre just once. Walk into the room with anger. The event has a strong center. Camo fermata, camel insert, chameleon spells breasts with inverted nipples. Listen, this is a poetry reading. Everyone dying can live safely in the metaphor of their hope. In the hop hoop hoopla hula hoop knowledge that the screens shot through with ammo. That the live stream is always off by a fraction of time. That the war ended later in Africa. Enough to warp any illusion of intimacy, of immediacy, of saying is without to be. Tubular volume gauge of this sound editing software pumps decibels in the lowest phi animation of desire. Flicker of energy in oblong proportions. Pink annexation lands decay on rocks, on planets, orbits plumping with want. Sound waveform of this poem spikes in militaristic precision, medicinal optimism, the animal roar, roar, war, careering forward into battle, into playback, garlanded present, fluorescent flowers, soldiers and laurels, soldered with rose hips. Thank you.
Du 12 au 14 février prochain, c'est le retour du circuit musical Taverne Tour. Plus de 100 artistes d'ici et d'ailleurs prendront d'assaut les bords de l'avenue du Mont-Royal, du boulevard Saint-Laurent et de la rue Saint-Denis. Voyez entre autres Proto Martyr, Cap Bambino, Christopher Owen, The Mystery Lights, Lydia Lunch and Mark Hurtado, Sean Nicholas Savage, Emma Becco, Thax, Camilla Sparks, et plusieurs d'autres. Consultez toute la programmation et procurez vos billets en ligne au tavernetour.ca. Une présentation de Sirius XM.
We're back with Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show. Thanks for listening. We're live from the booth here on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm Catherine McLeod here with Jason Camlott. And today we are in Vienna. And in the world of some sonic poetry, we were just listening to first to a conversation with the poet Clara Duplessis that was recorded in Vienna of June 2025. It was actually recorded in the kitchen of the apartment where I was staying in Vienna. And we were having just like a really nice gathering after the conference. Poetry Off the Page had finished. And so there was lots of noise in the background, which actually didn't come through on the recording. So it was, but we sort of transported back in time to that moment by listening to it. We were listening to Claire Duplessis talking about reading the poem called The Reading is a Moment of Hope at an open mic night in Vienna the night before. And then we were also talking with her about just how she's read it over the past months since, you know, she'd been reading the poem at quite a few different readings. And then we got to hear the poem on a recording that she had done at Obero Gallery here in Montreal. Jason, what was it like listening to Clara read that poem, especially after hearing her talk about it?
Well, as I think I said when we were speaking in your kitchen in Vienna, I've heard her perform that poem numerous times, and so, but I wasn't present at the Obero reading, but you were present at that reading, I believe.
Yes, and she was reading with Juana Evasilikoy. It was such a great night.
Yeah, and I was thinking as I was listening to that recording that we just heard, how differently she read it in Vienna as we were sort of fleshing out a little bit because of the kinds of poetry that were being presented at that conference. It was kind of a slam poetry oriented conference. And so it was interesting to watch Clara sort of adapt, adjust, not necessarily become a slam poet before our eyes, but sort of take in some of the performative modes that she heard around her and witnessed around her. And I guess played up a little bit some of the gesture. There are interesting typographical elements to poem and other poems from this book, The Postmortem of the Event, from which that poem comes. And we may get to hear a little bit later her talk about this, but she was telling me in another interview I did with her how often the punctuation, ellipses, other things that signal potential performative moments in the poems, but that are really just, you know, dots on the page sometimes, are performed with gesture. And I was struck when I saw her perform in Vienna how much gesture she was using.
Right.
And she said, as she's continued to work on these poems and rehearse them and perform them, the gesture has just sort of been ramped up even more.
Right.
But she's sort of, in converting the poem from the page to the poem as a not only a spoken but an embodied form of performance, she has been increasingly using her whole body in performing it. And I think I saw a little bit of that already beginning to come out when we saw her read it in Vienna.
Yeah. She's been doing, she was doing a poetry tour in South Africa in the fall too. And some of the performances she was doing there involved these like red gloves. And maybe she talked with you actually just after that. I forget if it was just before or after that tour, but I was also really struck by how performative her work was getting. And I'm just really excited to see her perform next here in Montreal, because I agree that I think her work is becoming more and more performative how she's been reading it. We're not going to get to this yet, but just it makes me think about how the next day after that conversation that we recorded in the kitchen in Vienna, she was reading as a sort of the opening act for Christina Gossel's launch of a chapbook, and that all happened also in Vienna. And Clara read a very performative poem that night that is actually all numbers, and yet she really dramatizes it. It's numbers from a transcript, I believe, and sort of that I was just struck just that merely one night afterwards, how performative her reading was and how much she captivated us with like how she gestured with her hands and just her expressions and everything. So, yeah.
Yeah. So we have a lot of content to get into this show. And I think we will be able to hear some clips of that series of pieces that you're talking about, which was a poem that was built out of three recordings, integrating the timestamps of those three parallel recordings of a COVID time book launch that she did outside. But before that, we're going to hear one more poem performed by Clara. Then we're going to go back to your kitchen, Catherine, and we're going to hear some more conversation from the kitchen.
Excellent.
And get to hear Christina's voice a little bit in that next conversation.
Yeah.
But first, let's listen to Clara perform one more piece.
000000. Thank you for being there. Thank you. 000124. Culture. Culture. 000402. Basically just saying, I just want to say maybe one other thing. 000602. That's 000627. Voice is adult. Voice adults. 000718. Now. 000808. Very, very. 000837. The dust will settle the dust settling. 001106. Stop now. Zero 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 eight three seven. What to do with knowledge? To carry myself up through armfuls of velvet. Dust will settle, so I'm jumping straight into the dust settling in the corners of the grid. Don't worry, no worries. That dust just never corners. Red waiting. My eyelash instantly itemizes my eyelash. My opinion, man, I believe in excuses. Like death. Enter an eyelash parenthesis raised metrically. 001057. Uneven beauty. 001106. Okay, I'm going to stop there. 001123. Because it is narrative and the first time that I've really been there. I realized at some point that I don't do character. I am a fiction writer and novelist, am I not? The narrative, too, is very much based on interiority. So you get all of that landscape, all of those internal thoughts going on and images coming up. Part of the writing process was brilliant. I don't know how to write. I don't know how to make it happen. How do you get someone that's interesting? How do you get someone to see that everyone is muttering? 001316. I don't know who spoke. 001413. If this was set in a novel, I don't think there would be action. So let me live inside. 001545. It's in the work. We find those who understand. 001557. Find out what that looks like and what that feels like. 001644. It was created, this particular scenario. Zero 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 zero. The event. Zero 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 four zero two.
You're listening to Clara Duplessis reading the poem Open Work. It's a poem from her book Postmortem of the Event, and we're listening to a recording that she made at Obero here in Montreal.
Zero zero three three zero seven. Eventually. 011558. It's not a reading event? An erotica. Or rotting. These eras. These ears. Zero zero 01914. In this, that entire book, I never talked about South Africa. I never mentioned it. I never stated in an entire book the background. 002015. You can always reflect that you're not neutral. 0020022. Right. There's the whole multiplicity of violence. 002047. Violence is under the surface. 002205. Voice is much bigger. 002655. I didn't know what to expect. I can see your voice, and your voice is the violence. 002740. There's this great event, Come the Aggressors. It certainly was during Women's Stay at Home. They manipulate power itself. Scary. The violence you could get held up in. You have to be ready for it, to get called up to fight, to survive. That's the language they use. So if that's the forehead, where does it get paid back? 002846. I've prepared a transcript to face in advance. It more about art violence, like sagging into a squat. Lay down the law of use. There is a small group of pain. Find a fatality and make use of modulation. Sorry. Here. I keep wanting to make a cursory reading of this series. It's so hot, so hot. Artists are taking matter into your own hands. Open. The sounds and vibrations. Take a shot at the past. You have an identity adjuster between the lines. 003127. Graciously spy in a manner planned, working your eyes to see warm ovulating irises grow into straight gardens. Enjoy life, elaborating everything. Seems to work. 003210. I guess the question is how the violence we're talking about branches into malaise in relation to unthinking violence. 003238. Creativity. Interconnectivity. 003307. Despite the silence. 003307. Despite.
We just want to get a waltz back in there. We're going to come back to more of that piece that we just heard by Clara Duplessis. In fact, I did a long interview with her about that piece, which was called Open Work. And we'll hopefully get to play a little bit of that interview and then maybe hear a little bit more of Open Work. We were about halfway through it when we switched to the beautiful blue Danube. Catherine, you swam in the Danube, didn't you, when we were in Vienna?
I did, with poet Clara Duplessis. So it's a most appropriate switch to just make sure that the Blue Danube does get into the sound of this this radio show today. In fact, yeah, swimming, the Danube, blue, it was really all interwoven. The poetry night with Christina Gussel that Clara Duplessis opened for the next night, in her introduction to Christina's work, there's actually references to swimming all throughout, and we hadn't actually swum at that point, so it was like the swimming, the Danube was already there, really carrying us away in our imaginations, and then yeah, swimming in the Blue Danube was, I will say, a highlight of the time in Vienna.
Was the Danube beautiful, and was the Danube blue?
It was beautiful. Yes, I can say that definitively. I remember the sky was blue. So in contrast, it wasn't as blue as the sky. It was a beautiful sort of twilight blue as the sun was setting and the lights were coming on in the city. I will say, though, it was an incredibly clean river, and it felt like everyone was swimming. There are beautiful swimming spots. It's really nice to see how well maintained that is, and lots of good, I'm sure, good initiative from the city of Vienna to keep it swimmable. So it was certainly blue, and blue skies are in my mind when I think back. So yes, I will say it was blue.
All right. So now that we've been transported back to Vienna, let's head back to some of our field recordings. The field, in this case, being back in your kitchen, and let's hear from Clara a little bit more. Who other people who may have been in the kitchen at that moment, as well as Christina, who whose mm-hmm. work we're going to hear next. But first, a little bit of an interview again.
Thanks.
Could we also give a contextual note of where we are?
Yes, that's what I was about to say, is that this interview with Claire Duplessis is taking place in sort of an after-conference space, in that my daughter, also named Clara, has come with us to the conference, and I wanted to bring the two Claras together, and so we're recording this in the little apartment where I've been staying with my daughter Clara, and we're here in the kitchen. In fact, we have Clara Duplessis, as we've been
hello talking.
We also have our co-host for the radio show, Jason Camelot.
Hi, you're listening to CJLO 1690.
We have Nava Camelot.
Hey.
And with
Christina Gustler.
And you introduced us in the beginning, and you're going to be collaborating with Claire Duplessis on Monday. Could you say a word about that?
Of course, I'd love to, yeah. Okay, I've just been publishing a book with text and code from my audiovisual works and an essay by Clara.
Would it make any sense to play the audio portion of your audiovisual work as part of this radio episode? Yes? So can you tell us a little bit about the work then?
Okay, that was a trap.
How would you set it up if we were to play it to listeners in Montreal? Maybe like 4 to 5 listeners in Montreal. What are we about to hear?
Oh, you're going to hear a story about birds and fish and ducks and elephants, and about diversity and about sensory abilities and not abilities. And you've heard it in Edmonton at the Spoken Web Conference 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So listen to it and tell me what you think about it. And
And can you remind me the title of the work again?
The universe is not only queerer than we suppose, but it's queerer than we can suppose.
It's queerer than we can suppose.
Okay, and this is a quote from G.B. Haldane from 1927.
Thank you very much.
Hi, everybody. Nice to have you here. I wish you a pleasant transmission. Now, here's the story. It's a story about an elephant, a duck, a fish, and a bird. It's a radical anti-binary story about water, air, and sound. It's about complexity and intensities, wishes and dreams. And so it goes. Says the elephant, "I wish I could fly." Says the fish, "I wish I could walk." Says the bird, "I wish I could swim." Says the duck, "Tra-la-la-la-la-la, I can do all of that." The others go, full of admiration. "Well," says the duck, "wait a second," says the bird. "I can't swim, but many birds can. And some birds can even dive. They dive while swimming or plunge dive from the air. How deep they go, how long they stay down. Some keep flying while they dive. Others have their own technique for moving under water." The others go, in awe. Says the fish, "I can't walk, but some fish can. They travel over land, climb on trees, or walk along the bottom of the ocean over rocks and sands. Some even jump, and some wriggle along like snakes. And there are flying fish as well. They leap out of the ocean into a gliding flight. Their fins are shaped like birds' wings. Remarkable distances they cover." Again, the others go, with delight. Says the elephant, "I'm an excellent swimmer. I can't fly, except in my dreams. And because I can't fly, I often dream about it. Here's how I do it. The trick is to become air. I shift my attention from my body's gravity-stuck matter to the air that flows through it. In one decisive breath, I'm able to ascend and move freely around in air like air. Me, I listen attentively. I too have those dreams. My thought is plump. I take a run up as quick as I can, then jump up into the air, much like the flying fish. It's wondrous how the air enfolds me and carries me away. How high up I go, how far I travel. My dog, she whines. She's not impressed by dreams. She's jealous of birds, the ones that fly. So am I. Pictures come to mind. Johann and Anna Blume, 1977-78. Flugversuch, flight attempt. A series of photos. With obvious pleasure, they bounce around on a sofa. And Vito Acconci. I'm pretty sure the video is his, but I could be wrong. Standing on a dune, he circles his arms through the air. And a voice says, if I practice flying every day, and my children practice flying every day, and my children's children, and their children, and their children, and their children, and their children, one day they will fly. And off he jumps out of the frame. Samuel Beckett had a bird period during the 1950s and 60s. Juna Barnes, across her oeuvre, challenged normative assumptions about an anthropocentric universe. Leonora Carrington created female hybrid creatures in her paintings and prose, all part human, part animal. Leonora Finney's work is full of human, animal, and fish hybrids, some of them caught in the very act of transformation. Virginia Woolf linked artists to water dwellers by labeling them queer fish. Now you may wonder, what about the acoustic extravaganza announced in the title? Whale songs, anyone? Mammals. But fish, they're mute, aren't they? Not true. Says the fish, we chit-chat vividly. We grunt and croak, chirp, crackle, whoop and whistle. We click and rasp, bark, moan, growl, hoot, pop and eek in rhythmic patterns. With infrasound and ultrasound, beyond the range of human hearing. And we have more ways of conversation. Visual, tactile, chemical, and not used on Earth without device, electrical. Sounds have advantages in the aquatic world. They spread quicker, 4 times as quick than in the air. They're absorbed less. They reach much further than in air. So how do we hear? With our inner ear and nerves, our somatic sensory perception. As one of the party people me thinks, that sounds like rave. Electronic dance music's full body experience ecstasy. Slapping bass sounds fish can do too. Aye, says the fish, we talk. Away they walk, fly, swim in friendly chatter.
Le Fuck Off Festival is back for its 12th edition in Quebec City from February 13th to the 21st. Presented by SiriusXM, this major celebration of merging and alternative music will light up the capital with nearly 100 artists. Come discover your next favorite acts, including Guab, Afternoon Bike Ride, Mess, and Wizard. Full details at fuckoff.com. That is PHOQUEOFF.com.
We're back at Sonic Lit, CJLO 1690. We were just listening to The Universe is Not Only Queerer Than We Suppose, It Is Queerer Than We Can Suppose. That's from a chapbook, Fish on a Walk, that was put together, I think, specifically for a performance, a collaborative performance that was done by Christina Gossel and Clara Duplessis. The chapbook is, we're holding it in our hands, you can maybe hear it here. It was published in 2025, and it was published by No Properties Press, Vienna, Austria, Europe. And, you know, Christina is such a wonderful artist and person, and I think that story captures the kind of simultaneous just sort of joy that informed her spirit. I only met her once, so it's twice actually. But also the gravity of the way she thinks about and perceives the world. So there's a real playfulness and a real seriousness kind of at work in her poetry, her performances, her coding, art, everything that she does. And we got a little bit of a taste of it through both the content of the story and I think the way she read that poem story.
Yeah, I sure agree. That chapbook was launched in Vienna just in the days after the conference Poetry Off the Page Around the Globe that Jason and I were attending there. We actually were there and had presented a digital piece that was about our radio show, Sonic Lit, about the experience of hosting a radio show about poetry and playing poetry on air. So it is only fitting that we are doing a bit of a retrospective return to Vienna on Sonic Lit today. Oh, the waltz is beginning. Oh, I'm floating across the room in a graceful waltz. We have been transporting ourselves sonically back to Vienna through the waltz. I'm glad that you brought that one in, Jason. We've got a little bit more waltzing to do. I think we're going to be waltzing
out
of Vienna and into the present. We are going to be returning to Montreal, and we're going to be talking with Claire Duplessis, though, again. And this connects to a project that you've been doing this year. We've both been involved in the podcast that is about to launch, and it's a project called Literary Listening, and you've been speaking with sound studies scholars and sonic artists, practitioners about how they listen and how they have learned to listen, how listening has become a practice in their lives, not only in their work. And you got to speak with Claire Duplessis as part of Literary Listening. So I think this is really, in many ways, a continuation of these conversations we were hearing in Vienna. And you have a clip of speaking with Clara, but do you want to kind of situate us into where you were in the, you know, in the room, the space, how you got into this particular part of this conversation?
Yeah, sure. Very quickly, this literary listening project, part of it involves, as you were saying, interviewing scholars and artists specifically about questions of techniques of listening, how they go about listening and sort of having them reflect on their methods, their techniques, what I, you know, refer to as audile techniques, their techniques of listening that inform either their critical methods or their art-making methods and performance methods. This particular portion of an interview that I did with Clara was about her book, Postmortem of the Event, and it's a section in which we were talking about the piece Open Work, of which we heard, you know, a good 5 minutes of her reading it in her performance at Obero earlier. So this is really us sitting down and sort of talking about and Clara reading little portions from and then reflecting on what's happening in that particular piece. So it's a little bit sad because it's adieu to Vienna. But we're going to hear, you know, Clara reflect on a work of her art. And then if we have time, we'll go back to playing a little bit more of Open Work, the second part of
that
it.
That sounds great. Let's listen.
Actually selecting passages for people to read that I've chosen,
But I'm kind of interested because the questions I'm going to be asking, I think it will be more effective if you lead us through your text in your own way. So,
okay. I'll just start with the opening, I think. So this is the first page of Open Work. 00000. Thank you for being there. Thank you. 000124. Culture. Culture. 000402. Basically just saying, I just want to say maybe one other thing. 000602. That. That's. 000627. Voice is adult. Voice adults. 000718. Now. 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 000808. Very. Very. 000837. The dust will settle the dust settling. 001106. Stop there.
Thanks.
And then the work continues for a while, right? But I think the first passage, it does lay the foundation for the kind of work that's happening. It aligns those three recordings into this new singular timestamp, which, you know, we're thinking now, now, now. When is now? Is it like each one of the three readings? Originally, is it now, as in the present moment? Is it the now of listening later when this has been broadcast? So it makes it aligns time in this really strange way. But it also is one of the most clear examples of how the three different audio files intersect, right? Because these little examples, these repetitions or variations of one another, are actually from the monster transcript.
Why do you call it the monster transcript?
You should see the monster transcript. It was very unruly, right? Because if you overlay three different conversations and then transcribe it, the syntax is mostly gone. The narrative arc is mostly gone. The argument is gone. It's just this like weird, this weird space of language and polyvocality. And talking about listening, though, like when you listen to the monster document, to the monster file before it's transcribed, it equally has this unruly nature while also pretending to have meaning. And like when you listen to it, maybe I should send you an excerpt of it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
When you listen to it, you almost get tricked into thinking that you're listening to full sentences and to to discourse of some kind. However, you very clearly get unsettled. Very soon you get unsettled.
So just to be clear, because I don't think I completely mm-hmm. understand what this file is made of. Mm-hmm. It's three recordings that are being played simultaneously? Yeah. Okay.
Yes. So the three book launches that happened in the park, they were all structured according to similar questions, a similar introduction, then similar questions and similar readings from the book. And so in between, there are discussions happening that all the participants contribute to. But when you take the three audio files and you literally lay them on three tracks across from one another, the introductions are the same or roughly the same and the questions are the same. But what happens in the middle is totally different. So there's this strange tripling effect that that creates the illusion of similarity and comprehensibility, but actually is actually just nonsense.
Right? Yeah, I'd like to. So
the reason I asked why you call it the monster track or file is because I associate the term monster like with its root, which is to demonstrate a kind of moral aberration or something bad, right?
Right.
So that you know the point of monstrosity in a way is that the suspect interior is actually revealed as a stigmata of sorts, you know, to the viewer. So there's a kind of moral demonstration or a demonstration of moral offness or aberration or evil or badness, right? In a monster. I mean, we also have now in our day and age all kinds of cute monsters and things like that. And so that's been completely transformed.
Resuscitation of the monster.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm interested to actually pursue this idea of the relative monstrosity of this mixed file and where you would identify, you know, or what's being represented, you know, as aberrant, if not as bad, you know, as morally, you know, suspect. Is it in the mixture without actual meaning or intentional meaning? Is it, you know, et cetera?
Yeah, it was almost like a block of clay. Like, you know, it's sonic and it's a bunch of different voices that are coming together. But it hadn't been shaped. Right, in any way, and so both the, you know, it's pure soundscape without, but because it's triplicate, it's become temporally suspect. It's become untrue to actually what it was originally. It has been faked into like this like. Even larger, to take up even more time and space, and both when you listen to that file and when you see the transcript, it's overwhelming in a way that's not accessible. I think if I were to present that sound file as a kind of sound installation, for example, people would lose interest pretty fast. Right? You know, it's too noisy. It's like the ratio between signal and noise is such that I think the listener would suspect that they're being, you know, led around by the nose.
So they suspect it's suspect.
Yeah,
which is interesting. So I find that answer extremely interesting because, I mean, there are a few things I heard in the answer that make this sort of monstrous, right? Mm-hmm. And one is there's this a sense of the possibility of inauthenticity of some kind or of it being like fake, not real, not connected to something real.
That's actually so interesting because, sorry to interrupt you, but like the fact that it felt inauthentic before it had been made into art, right?
Yeah.
Like by making it into art, which arguably is the construction, it needed to be constructed into authenticity.
Yeah. It comes in a way from its origin, right? Like you said, it's a soundscape, but what is it a soundscape of? That would be one question.
It's actually a very noisy file because it was outdoors, right? And it was in Jari Park in the Villeray neighborhood. And so you hear children laughing and playing in the background. You hear people having picnics. You hear a squirrel at some point attacking one of the participants. You hear all kinds of cars going by, airplanes overhead, right? And so in that sense, it is also an actual soundscape of that moment in Montreal in 2020 of people also escaping their homes because this is like the only public space that they actually have access to at that particular historical moment. But beyond then, also it is this record of a literary event, and so there's this intersection there of public space and event making and archiving of that event.
So the sound exceeds the...
You've been listening to Clara Duplessis speak about her poem called Open Work. She was talking with Jason Camelot in December 2025. And throughout this show, we've been listening to clips from earlier in 2025, Vienna, but that conversation took us back here to Montreal and very beautifully took us into Claire Duplessis describing recordings made in Jury Park with also lots of sounds around them, but in a very open space. So we are going to return back to Clara Duplessis reading from Open Work as a way to close out this show. 0 0 2 5 2 7 0 0 2 6 1 4 0 0 2 5 0 7 0 0 3 5 0 7 0 0 3 5 5 3 0 0 3 6 5 1 0 0 3 9 0 7 0 0 3 9 5 3 0 0 4 0 1 6 0 0 3 5 0 7 0 0 3 6 5 1 0 0 3 9 0 7 0 0 3 9 5 3 0 0 4 0 1 0 0 4 3 2 1 0 0 4 6 3 1 0 0 5 6 2 1 0 0 5 6 3 1 0 0 5 6 2 1 0 0 5 6 3 1 0 0 4 0 1 0 0 4 3 2 1 0 0 5 6 3 1 0 0 5 6 2 1 0 0 5 6 3 7 0 0 5 7 1 8 0 0 5 8 1 9 0 0 5 9 3 8 0 1 0 6 2 8 0 1 0 6 2 8 0 1 0 2 8 0 1 1 4 5 7 kind.